Welcome along to the last leg. Jordan Norris here on WLR's Monday Night Sports Programme. That time of the week again already. My God, the year is flying. But plenty of sport on our plates for good measure, thank God. We're going to be crossing live to Paris to Will Downing to discuss the Irish medal hopes this week at the Olympics. We'll hear from the man who confirmed that John O'Shea will be staying in the Ireland setup for the years ahead. But first, let's reflect on another busy weekend of hurling here in Waterford.
Everyone wants to win the championship. Kelly Hunter are there, they're out in front of everyone, but sure, like if we thought we weren't going to try and get to a county final or we weren't going to go up against them, what's the point? What's the point of working this hard?
We're a quarter the way that we want to be, but we stood up, we attacked the ball when we got the opportunity to do that. We were very direct, and that's really what we want to be, a direct team.
Happy with the intensity the lads brought to it, in fairness to them, and keep it thrilled with the lads that came in.
Now, joining me to discuss this weekend's Waterford Senior Hurling Championship action and to reflect on the week that's just gone is McDara McDonagh from the Dungarvan Leader. McDara, we'll start with the defending champions. Now 54 games unbeaten, and no closer to anyone beating them anyway, by the looks of it.
Well, you'd wonder, because they broke the record last year of 10 titles in a row, and then they were missing a few players, and you'd say, I wonder, but like, and then they score 5-22 or 5-23, and they have 15 wide, so that's 45. Ish shots at goal, like, it's just, they're just a machine. And everything they do is so professional, even the warm up, the whole lot. They brought on Conor Tobin, he scores 2 goals and a pint. They start Cormac Power plays very well, he scores something like 1-3, 1-4. Kevin Manley's flying it, and this is without Desi and Patrick Fitzgerald. Yep. Like, so they have no notion of letting anything slip. I think they're driven by one thing: they want to win the Tommy Moore Cup again. They want to win it once more, and that is their driven to get now, but they're not taking their eye off, but that is their ultimate aim. But to do that, of course, you need to win all the games, and now Dungarvan were short their lines for starters, and then Patrick Curran got injured, John Curran got injured, Mikey Burke, a possible injury as well, came off at half time, so they struggled. They weren't great against Lismore, and when you're struggling, the last team you want to meet is Ballygunner.
That's for certain. Yeah, the depth just doesn't seem to be there from a Dungarvan point of view, and for them, I suppose their game, the most important game for them, was the game against Lismore, and they lost that. I don't think anyone realistically expected them to beat Ballygunner. Let's take a second. Let's listen to Tomás McCarthy speaking to Dara O'Sullivan afterwards.
Dara, considering you're down Philip Mahoney, Desi Hutchinson, Patrick Fitzgerald, how pleased are you to put up 5-22 tonight?
Yeah, listen, you're happy with the intensity the lads brought to it, in fairness to them, and keep you thrilled with the lads that came in. Even the lads came off the bench in the second half, they all made an impact, and that's what we're looking for. We honestly think we can go deep into our panel, So, I think that showed it there today. But look, in fairness to Dungarvan, they lost some of their best players too. Patrick came off early, and he's their main go-to guy, so obviously that had a huge impact on the game. But look, from our perspective, we'd have to be happy with the performance.
What's the message to those players, the likes of Cormac Power and Conor Tobin, who want to get into this 15 on a regular basis, Dara?
Listen, just, stick to the process and keep working hard and do what's right for the team. That's it, really. There's no rocket science to it, to get into this group and get on this team, you have to work really, really hard, and that's what the lads done today, And look, these lads have been around for a while too, and they're only waiting to get the opportunity, and a couple of lads being out today, and they certainly took their opportunities, some of the lads,
What's the latest on Philip, Desi and Patrick, Dara?
Listen, we'd like to think that we'll have all of them back for the knockout stage of the championship. Whether they get back into the team or not, I'm not quite sure, But we'd like to think we'd have them available to us,
Yeah, so we won't see the three of them next week either against Lismore?
No, you won't see the three of them. You might see one or two of them maybe, but you won't see the three of them.
And then just looking to the week ahead in that group, Mac, Ballygunner and Lismore, you'd imagine that'll be another formality as well.
It should be, and Lismore, when they were going well, and they were going well, always struggled against Ballygunner for some reason. They were kind of their bogey team. Lismore never any fear of Monsign, but they always kind of struggled against Ballygunner. Haven't beaten them for a long time.
No.
Now, look, Lismore weren't great against Dungarvan, but they got the job done. And some of their well, maybe high-profile players weren't great that day. So if they can lift it, and the guys who played well, I mean, Finbarini was outstanding that game. Iro was very good fullback. So other players need to, if they can raise their game, they can give them, make it a battle, but it should be tighter than last Saturday. But who's going to go against Ballygunner here? So no, Ballygunner will win that.
Yeah, straightforward enough. Last night, quite interesting, the game, De La Salle and Mount Sine, 1 point win for Mount Sine, a lot of late drama in that game as well. And I suppose from a Waterford perspective, good to see Austin Gleeson back to his best. He's 221 now across the last two games, and obviously talismanic as ever from Mount Sine.
Yeah, and I know a lot of those scores were from place ball. I think he got 2 or 3 points in play last night, which is good to see.
Yeah,
we all know how good Austin is, and it's good to see him in that form. De La Salle, youngish team. I was talking to a man from De La Salle last week, and he told me that they had a young team going in. He wasn't sure how they'd get on. No, they weren't that young, because Sean O'Brien was there, Jake Dillon was there, Eddie Barrett was there, Thomas Douglas was there, Jack Fagan was there. So Mount Sinai would have had the advantage of having played the previous weekend.
Yeah.
That does make a difference for Sean. So Mons are in the quarterfinals, you know, so there's no crisis there.
No.
And good to see young player playing well. Adam Roche, is it?
Yeah, Adam Regan, yeah.
Adam Regan, always good to see good young players coming, you know.
I think he's one day over the age minor, he actually is at the moment. So, like, to come in and get 4 points from play in a game like that bodes very well for the future. But at the same time, you see the same with, as you mentioned, Conor Tove and Ballygunner, that as well. It's important not to be putting pressure on these lads either as well.
True. Very true. Very true.
And Tomás McCarthy was at that one again, McDara. We'll listen to his conversation now with Mount Sine manager Jamie O'Mara.
I think it was just work rate. I think, to be honest, we started the second half very poor. We didn't work it at all. De La Salle went 3 or 4 up, I think. And I think, in fairness, the lads just dug in, pure work rate. Just didn't want to give up on any ball, and eventually we got the reward at the end with the win. So, really happy with it.
You were 2 points down when Austin was standing over.
Yeah.
That free. Did you give him the single to go for a goal, or was it his own decision?
I think when Austin makes up his mind, he's going for a goal. I don't think anybody can change his mind. But no, look, we've seen it the last day against Passage, and we've seen him in over the years for Mount Sine and for Waterford. He has a fair smack on the ball. But look, I think he had his mind made up straight away, so I wasn't going to change it for him. If he's confident, I let him have it.
And when he stood over that free at the very end, were you confident that he'd put it over the bar?
No, I was shouting, put it over the bar. I think we were a pint up at the time, and I wanted to go 2 up at that stage. But again, look, you know Austin yourself, he's full of confidence, and when he hits a ball and like that after scoring a 21, he just fancies it again, so he'll go, you know. So look, I said, at the end of the day, we got it back again, we got the score that we needed, so really delighted with that, you know.
Yeah, and he got the winner then at the end into the freeze as well.
A brilliant free, yeah, absolutely, yeah. As I said, and actually, I think he might have missed one free today, but that was a brilliant free. It was actually on our own 65, and I think, in fairness, he hit it. As soon as he hit it, I could see the hand was going, so he knew it was over the bar, you know, so delighted Farm as well.
It was very close between Austin and Adam Regan in terms of man of the match. Jamie, like, how impressed have you been by Adam in his two performances so far?
He's been exceptional, really. As I said, we didn't really have him in the team much for the league. We started him against Ballygunner in the league final, and he probably knows himself he struggled a bit, but look, that was his first big game, I think, at senior. But since then, by moving him, we kind of moved him around a bit, and he's at the final a bit. He's been playing underage all his life. It's his first year in adult hurling, so it's after taking him a while, but he's at been really good. But the thing about it is, he's a great young fella, and even talking to him after the Passage game, I just said, look, keep focusing on training, keep focusing on your hurling, and don't be getting distracted with other stuff. And he knows exactly what he needs to do. So but look, he's 1 of 15, you know.
And can you just tell us just how young he is, Jamie?
Yeah, just saying, yeah. He's only a day over for minor this year, actually, so he won't be 18 now till the end of the year, but which is a pity, I suppose, for Clough and County. That, as I said, he's a very good talent, but look, at the end of the day, you have to work hard with your talent, and he does. And as I said, so far, we're delighted with him, but I suppose the challenge for him and us is to keep it going now.
How much of a lift will a win like this give the group?
It will, yeah, absolutely. As I said, we're kind of the walking wounded a little bit at the minute, so for us to get kind of nearly 3 weeks off, I suppose, and make a massive difference. But I think just in general, the club need a nice little lift like that. I suppose we came in this year, we're after being probably on the back end of our last year, we're probably things didn't go great for us for whatever reason. And look, the lads, in fairness, are after digging in. You could see it today how much it means to them. So look, I'm delighted for the players, and look, a lot of club people came down supporting us, and they've been very supportive all year, like, so delighted for them as well.
And just finally, Jamie, how important is it to top the group and go through automatically?
Yeah,
to
absolutely, because I think, as we all know, there's no certainties in the Waterford Championship, and regardless of and putting an extra game in your way is actually another chance to slip up and get beaten. So for me, as I said, it gives us a couple of weeks off, and I think definitely, as I said, we know for a fact whoever comes through to the quarterfinals is going to be tough, you know.
So look, last game then is the LaSalle and Passage. Now Passage were kind of comfortably beaten by Mount Sion, so if you use Mount Sion as the yardstick, you'd be saying the LaSalle are the favourites. But because Passage to a certain extent have their back to the door, you'd expect them to lift their performance. But De La Salle are probably the favourites there.
Yeah, you'd imagine, going off the evidence so far, that they would be, but you could also expect a tight game as well. We'll move to the other group now, and that'll see 4 Mile Water take on Ferrybank. 4 Mile Water, by most accounts, disappointing in their loss to Abbeyside. Abbeyside, of course, is true to the quarterfinals with 2 wins, but Derek Lyons after taking over in 4 Mile Water. Ferrybank, their first year back up at senior, so an important game for both teams, that one.
It is. No, look, 4 Mile got to semi-final last year where they get Ballygunner bags for about 40 minutes, like, before just falling away a bit. But new management had been going well in challenges by all accounts, and it just all went wrong on Saturday against Abbeyside. In discipline, I think Michael Halloran scored 11 points from frees.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, that's an issue that has to be sorted, but a lot of players didn't play up to form at all. So I don't know what it was. It can happen sometimes. But do you know what? Sometimes if you play badly, it's great to have a game straight away afterwards where you can put things right. And they're playing Ferrybank. And like, Ferrybank had a great win last year in the Premier Intermediate, but they're kind of struggling because some of their players went away after that, and they'll do well to retain senior status now.
Yeah.
So I think it's an ideal game for 4 Mile in a way, because they need to now get back on the winning horse, kind of thing, so to say. So you'd expect them to win that.
You would. Just touching on that group, Abbeyside, obviously 2 wins, you can't do any more than that. Michael Kiley hurling quite well as well. Like, they've shown good signs themselves.
Well, they have Conor Prunty playing well, Charlie Treen playing well, Michael Kiley playing well, Neil Montgomery still to come back. They now have 3 weekends off, I think, because they're in the quarterfinals, so they're free this weekend and they're free the following weekend because that's the preliminary quarterfinals.
Yeah.
So that might give Neil Montgomery a chance to come back. Like, they have, you know, some good players there. Lara Power on the goals, made fine save from Sean Welsh in the end when it was needed. Brian Lowe in the back line, named different guys, you know. But so they're a club that, if they all played to their best, they could rattle Ballygunner. I'm not saying they beat them, but they could certainly put it up to them, you know.
Yeah, they're the best place as anyone, really.
But what they have to do now, look, they're 2 games won, so they have a couple of weeks off. They'll hope to get Neil Montgomery back and to further strengthen the team. And, you know, they could progress in this championship.
Let's hear from Abbeyside boss Benji Whelan.
Benji, what did you like about that Abbeyside performance this evening?
We've been working on a number of directions, I suppose, Tomás, and it was heartening to see that what we're working on is actually coming to fruition. And we have a long way to go. I'd say we're a quarter of the way that we want to be, but we stood up. We attacked the ball when we got the opportunity to do that. We were very direct, and that's really what we want to be, a direct team.
Why did you choose Michael Kiley as captain this year?
I only have very limited experience of Michael back in the day as a minor, but when he came into camp straight off the senior setup, he impressed me with his presence and just the way he went about things. He's actually taken a big step, we feel, for the club, and so we'd like to reward him.
How strange was it to go up against 4 Mile Water this evening? Like, you've had so many great days with those players over the years, Benji.
Very strange. That said, it's not my first encounter, because back a couple of years ago with Kilmac, we took the Nair on in Lemmy Brown, so it was probably more that day, if you understand me. But it still is strange getting to meet old friends, and that part does definitely come into it. But look, we have good focus in our group, good focus in the backroom team, and you know, we were focused on what we needed to do today.
You're through to the quarterfinals now. What hopes do you have for this group of players in 2024?
I suppose we have our own personal goals. We won't be discussing them, but definitely what we want is we want to improve on that performance and replicate that plus 10% or maybe a little bit more, and we'd be very happy from there on.
What can you tell us about Neil Montgomery's injury? Haven't seen him in the first 2 rounds of the championship.
Neil is rehabilitating at the moment. We don't know if he's going to figure for us in championship. We hope he does, but it's really a just wait and see situation.
So far, so good for them. And the other game in Group A, Roan Moore against Tallow. Roan Moore against Clonae, decent game the other night. Roan Moore coming through with the two goals from Shane Mackey. Tallow beaten 23 points by Clonae, so you'd imagine that one kind of explains itself in a way as well.
Again, if you use that yardstick, yeah, it should be a comfortable win for Roan Moore. Tallow are struggling. No, their players are pushing on a bit. Their age profile is kind of against them as well. And you'd expect Roan Moore to win that. Really, Tallow, I think Tallow will do well to stay up. It's between Tallow and Ferrybank at this remove. To stay up there.
Yeah, I was just about to say to you, they always find a way in recent years. Like, they've just, every time they've been written off, they've always somehow put a performance together. But, like, you're looking at it this year and you're saying, if it comes down to Ferrybank and Tallow, you know, you nearly side in a way with Ferrybank. Like, Tallow, they've lost a lot of players, as you mentioned, so they'll do well to try and do their usual trick in a sense.
They have, and Ryan Gray's a huge loss to them, and
massive.
I hope he's recovering, well from his injuries after that unfortunate car crash. But I haven't seen Ferrybank this year, so I don't know exactly how they're going, but that's down the line. But yeah, Tallow are struggling at the moment.
I think something we're seeing across the board here in Waterford as well, like, a lot of small clubs are really struggling with, as much as, you know, one or two players in the starting 15 emigrating or moving or anything like that. Like, you're really seeing the effects of it. Like, I always think of the example of Ardmore, obviously, in my head, as you see a big time in Ballyduff Lower, Ballyduff Upper, you know, not so long ago, or a senior staple. Like, it's really happening. And then when you see the player pool that's going towards Ballygunner in a way in the city at all levels, like, the gap, if anything, is it getting bigger?
Yeah,
it is.
In a word, yes, it is. And I mean, I think you're going to see more clubs merging.
Yeah,
it's a pity to see it in one way. It's always a pity to see a club going out of existence. But a merger is probably a better bet than struggling to field a team and maybe going over two or three subs in matches. And I know it's a massive blow to an area if a club goes. Because, I mean, we have a lot of, there are some smaller schools are closing, you know, post offices are gone. You know, the identity of small rural areas is under pressure.
It is.
And if a club goes, like, it's a big blow. It's a big blow. But in some other cases, maybe it's the only practical thing to do. So it's going to be an ongoing problem. And I do see some more mergers coming in the next couple of years.
Definitely. And just while you're here as well, obviously we have had the selection committee put together for the new senior hurling manager, with five strong committee put together. There's some rumblings, obviously, as to what's going to happen, but I don't think anybody is any surer than anybody else. But an appointment for the future, I suppose, is the most important thing, because, again, bringing in some of those younger players that we've talked about as well, like, we haven't had the results at minor and under 20 level in recent years. So it'll be interesting to see what happens for Waterford hurling. Like, it's again another case of so near yet so far.
Yeah, well, somebody said to me, we're very near this year, but another way, we're further away than ever, which is maybe a little bit harsh. But, you know, I mean, they were fierce unlucky. So many small things. Conceded a goal in the point in injury time to tip. Mark Rogers, what's that, 65 over the back? No, it was a 65, but on other days you wouldn't have gotten a 65, and Waterford should have got one early in the game, same game. You know, so small things like that against them. The shelf life of some of the players is probably, it's 1 to 2 years.
Yeah, it's not a question, yeah.
Continuity might be the job here, but look, the five, I'm sure the committee put together, the subcommittee put together, will do their work and they'll come up with somebody. And in fairness to them, the last two appointments, nobody knew who they were until they were made, so they were good at keeping secrets.
Yeah, well, fingers crossed they manage to do that in the next few weeks. I've been told on a personal level that the appointment will be made before the end of the club championship, so that's not too long to wait at the same time.
And you'd hope so, because, whatever manager is in place needs to get a chance to see the players playing and see who are the fringe players that you could be bringing in, because you always need to bring in a few players into a county panel to freshen things up. So hopefully that'll be done soon.
Definitely. McDara McDonagh, thanks very much. Now, I'm delighted to say that I'm joined on the line by Irish Examiner soccer correspondent John Fallon. John confirmed the news on Friday that John O'Shea will shortly be confirmed as Heimer Hallgrimsson's assistant after mulling over the offer from the new Ireland boss. O'Shea, of course, was in charge for four friendlies scheduled between Stephen Kenny's exit and Hallgrimsson's appointment on the 10th of July. John, first of all, thanks very much for your time, but I suppose this kind of comes as no surprise that whatever capacity he was going to be involved in the future, the post Stephen Kenny era, John O'Shea was always going to form a crucial part of that.
Yeah, I think so, for a number of factors. Primarily, it's ultimately a decision of the new manager. And when he looked at the job, took the job, he would have looked at the most qualified person. And John is, in his own right, an emerging coach. You know, he's had quite a bit of experience in England with Stoke and Reading, also Birmingham for a while there with Wayne Rooney. So that in its own right, merits consideration. But the fact that he was there towards the end of Stephen Kenny's reign, knows the players, had worked with the 21s, and then had filled that gap, as you mentioned at the start, with those four matches in March and June. For continuity purposes, it was logical for him to be the first choice. So, as Heimer told us about 2 weeks ago, he was going down to Waterford to formally offer John the job. There's been some negotiations, I think, since that have gone on, involving another Waterford man, Stephen Hunt. He represents John in these types of situations, and I understand that they have come to a positive conclusion, and due to be formally announced in the any day this week.
You mentioned in your article as well that the retention of Glenn Whelan and Paddy McCarthy is also a potential priority. So the continuity factor is definitely very important. But just from an overall perspective, John, when the news broke that Heimer Hallgrimsson was the new Republic of Ireland manager, it caught a lot of people by surprise. Were there any inklings beforehand that this was a possibility, or did it actually, in a way, catch everybody left field?
I suppose it did, because he was in a job up till the end of June, and he was under contract with Jamaica. Because you're aware, and this is probably aware, we'd been told that existing contractual obligations had precluded the FEI from appointing someone until April. That came and went. We'd no manager. Then we were told that the tour deadline was the 7th of September, which was the England match. So he wasn't someone that sort of fitted, the criteria and the timeline and the contractual situation. So he was never really a name that featured on the shortlist. Then when you throw in the fact that sound bites are coming from Jonathan Hill, now the ex-FEI CEO, and even Mark Cannon himself had said that it would have been an advantage for the candidate to be Irish. So it probably threw us off the scent as well a bit. So he was a surprise name. He wouldn't be a household name. But then when you look at it and you consider it, and you check it against the criteria that the FEI laid out, principally that he has international experience with his native Iceland, did very well, both as a co-manager and then in his own right. At the Euro 2016 and the World Cup 2018, left Iceland certainly in a better place than when he came into the job. And similarly with Jamaica, albeit it didn't end that well at the Copa America, he still brought him to a better place. So when you look at where we are, 58th in the world, and then you couple with the fact that where the FEI are financially, there was always going to be a restriction on the amount of money that they could pay out. And while that is never really confessed as a factor, it is a factor in that it rules out a certain premium level of manager who are just used to commanding €1 million plus annual salaries around the game. So unless it's someone with an affinity to Ireland or to see this as a project, they're going to look elsewhere. So when you look at all those ingredients, he probably is the best we were going to get, all things considered. I think, as we can all probably surmise at this stage, 8 months on from Stephen Kenny's exit. Lee Carson was the number one target from the outset. And I believe that sort of dragged on until, you know, February time. And then once he was out, they looked broadly at other candidates, you know, across the European market and even further afield. And he's the one that they settled on. So although not a household name, someone with a track record of improving middle of nations. And at this stage, I think we just have to get on with it because we have 6 games coming up between September and November, which are going to sort of shape where we sit in the draw for the World Cup in December. And those qualifiers kick off then next March.
Yeah, absolutely. Like you just said there, like there were so many names that were banded about in the last few months before we came to this conclusion. We had Willie Sanyol, we had Gus Poyet, Steve Bruce, Neil Lennon, John O'Shea himself, Lee Carsley, you name it. The whole process, in a way, I think it was almost laughable for the FAI. It was just another unnecessary, drawn-out process that just looked bad for the organisation as a whole again, didn't it, John?
It did, yeah. The way they handled the communication around it was abysmal, frankly. So it didn't, you know, this, I always said with these things, the end would justify the means. And we don't know that yet. You know, we don't know what way Heimer is going to be received by the players. You'd like to think that it will be respected and, you know, they'll all play for him. But we don't know until we get these 6 matches over with whether that's going to be the case. But certainly along the way, there was mishaps, there was blunders. You hear stories about people being left late for calls and interviews, and the interview panel seemed to change along the way. So, yeah, it's not the first time that the FAI have made a mess of these things, but the very fact that they put a deadline of February and then April, and then finally they got to one that was really impossible without. We couldn't go beyond September without a manager. It really, really sheds the FAI in a sort of an amateur light, unfortunately. So you've got to park that for now because the international team is too important for a number of reasons, particularly supporters. And we have a man in. He does have pedigree. We do have players in form, thankfully. And we just have to get someone to shape that team into a team that's better than the last couple of campaigns and make them competitive for qualifying for tournaments, because it's been a long time since Euro 2016 in France.
Yeah, it does certainly feel like that was nearly a lifetime ago. And like you mentioned it there, a lot of it is about, you know, getting momentum behind the qualification campaign. We kind of saw a little bit in those 4 friendlies under John O'Shea, you know, like a small bit of enthusiasm growing and some positive signs of what we maybe can achieve. And I even think, you know, sitting there watching the Euros this summer and you look at smaller nations like the likes of Slovenia, Slovakia, Georgia, punching so high above their weight. But like the almost overwhelming thought when you're sitting there is Ireland should be doing this if, you know, things were going right.
Exactly. Yeah. It's you look at it and a sense of regret there, and that's where we have to be. And it's unfortunate. Even the last campaign, we didn't even finish third. You know, like although we had France and Netherlands in the group, the one fundamental you've got to do is challenge those two, and we didn't score a goal against, you know, those two in the 4 matches. And then Greece, you know, we lost those 2 games as well. So they're the types of things which this new manager has to correct when he goes into this Nations League campaign. Obviously, England will be, whatever will happen with them at the Euros, they're still the top team in a group. But then you have Finland and Greece again. And you've got to be winning games against Finland and Greece, or certainly not losing them. And that's where we are. That's what Ireland have been historically. We've beaten those teams below us or in and around us, and maybe took a point off the ones above us. And that's where we've got to get back to if we're going to be featuring at these tournaments. Because although the World Cup has expanded to 16 teams, it's still much more difficult to qualify than the Euros. And it looks like the Euros in 2028, we're going to qualify anyway by default as co-hosts. So I think we've got to give this one a good crack and see, can we at least get a playoff for the World Cup in America in 2026.
I know there's been a lot of speculation actually about another Waterford man, 18-year-old Romeo Akechukwu. He's just completed his 18th birthday there. There's a lot saying that he has as good as completed a move to Southampton for a long time. I know he's been playing in trial games for them and he's actually scored in two. So it seems as if that deal will be formally announced in the next few weeks as well, John.
Yeah, I think he turned 18 over the weekend and they were just waiting on that threshold to be passed. So again, you know, and I know this from covering the under 21 team for 11 years, that Romeo will be held up as being a possible saver for that position, but it's been so difficult. We've had so many players that mantle has been put, even the likes of, you know, another Waterford man, Jason Malumbi, looked really good at the start of Stephen Kenny's era, and then between injuries and different managers and moving around the place, haven't quite worked out. Joe Hodges, another one, Ireland under 21 captain. Josh Cullen is fine and he'll sit there. We need, I think, a foil for him. We need someone who's more creative and you know, more punchy in his play, and we think we're still struggling to find that person. The likes of Will Smallbone have come in and done okay, but you know, they have found it difficult at senior international level.
Definitely. I think we've probably never really replaced Wes Houlihan, to be honest. We'll have John O'Shea involved in the Ireland setup coming up in the next few weeks, and hopefully we'll have plenty to celebrate on the local scene and the national scene as well. John Fallon from the Irish Examiner, really, really appreciate your time. Keep up the good work. Thanks very much.
Bye-bye.
Now, joining me live on the line from the 2024 Olympics in Paris is none other than Will Downing. Will, thanks very much for joining me. It's been another very busy day for Team Ireland. We've had some good prospects so far, particularly saw it last night with Mona McSharry, again with Daniel Whiffen. There's a lot of medal prospects potentially coming up in the next week for Ireland. And yeah, it's just, I imagine it's a really exciting time. What's the atmosphere like in Paris within the Irish camp?
Oh, absolutely fantastic. And the swimming going brilliantly, like Daniel Whiffen qualifying the fastest for the final of the men's 800 metres freestyle. He is the world champion in it. A plethora of medals at the Europeans and the European under-23s last year in Dublin, up at Abbottstown. He's got a great prospect. Obviously, he's going not just in this, but also the 1500 free. He's deciding to skip the 400 metres free because he wants to swim in the Seine. He wants to be in the 10-kilometer open water swimming. And that, thankfully, is going to be right at the end of the swimming program. But he's a really, really exciting swimmer. Three golds at the European Championships last year and two at this year's Worlds. And then, obviously, all the success that he had at the under-23 Euros last year. And the fact as well that he is, you know, the fastest around right now. He's the European record holder. He's certainly looking for big things here. The short course world record he has, over 800 free, and he is currently the fastest swimmer. Well, he's actually the fastest of all time as he holds the European record. So that is a real thrill. And also tonight, great to see Mona McSharry qualifying in second fastest for the women's 100 metres breaststroke final.
Absolutely.
That's this evening. Ellen Walsh. Ellen Walsh is into the final of the women's 400 metres IM. So, I mean, this is really, really thrilling. This is very, very good to see. And Danielle Hill also qualifying, going into tonight's semi-finals of the women's 100 metres backstroke. So we didn't have a single finalist. After 1996, where obviously Ireland picked up a lot of medals, three golds and a silver in that, we hadn't had a finalist in an Olympic swimming until 2021. And now we've got three in the space of a day.
Yeah, I mean, you can't argue with that. That's absolutely tremendous. And a good start on the boxing front for Kelly Harrington earlier this afternoon as well, Will.
Yeah, a unanimous points victory over Alessia Messiano of Italy goes through to the quarterfinals in the women's 60kg in the lightweight. We had 10 qualified for that out of the 12 different weight divisions, a full house in the women's all six weights in that. We've got entrants in it. So, yeah, very good positivity. Progressing really well in that. It was unfortunate about Aidan Walsh's defeat in the welterweight, having picked up a medal in Tokyo 3 years ago, having lost to Makan Traore of France. But now things are progressing very well. Harrington, she was very, very assured. It was a very comfortable victory over Messiano, and she now makes her way through into the quarterfinals. And things are looking very, very good from her point of view. You would certainly hope that she's well on the line to successfully defending her title.
You would definitely hope so. And on the rowing front yesterday, another good start from an Irish perspective.
Yep, all very good positivity there. Excellent progress along the way. I think Paul O'Donovan and Fintan McCarthy were a little bit miffed that they were only seeded third going into the lightweight double sculls, considering the fact that, you know, they are the reigning Olympic champions, the reigning world champions in the two games since then. And, well, they're making very, very good of what they've managed so far. And things really going good across the board. Like, you consider the fact that we have, I think it's about 16 who are entered in it, and all but Alison Bergen and Zoe Hyde in the women's double sculls have picked up major championship medals internationally in their career. I mean, you can't... I don't think you can say much better than that. The fact that so many have come through Skibbereen, which was a club that was set up for recreational purposes, really, more than anything else, giving the people of Skibbereen something extra to do, and has produced so many great champions.
Yeah, it's an amazing thought when you really think about it. Going into later in the week, and obviously what's ahead of us, like, there's so much happening, and I imagine it's almost a nightmare from your point of view to try and keep track of it all. But from an athletics perspective, all eyes in Waterford here, of course, locked on Thomas Barr and the 4x400 meter relay team. I spoke to the man last week, and there's no confirmation as of then about Rashida Adeleke's involvement with the team. Is that picture any clearer at the moment?
Well, it's not going to be. When you consider she's got potentially four rounds of the women's 400 metres individually. Mm. She is ranked the third fastest going into it behind Marilady Paulino of the Dominican Republic and Natalia Kaczmarek of Poland, who edged her out for that individual 400 gold in Rome. That obviously will be a massive priority. She is one of the favourites for it. Lieke Klaver of the Netherlands is currently ranked fourth in that. That's not, by the way, in terms of times. That is in terms of the ranking system, the world rankings that have come into play over the last couple of years. So those races would be starting on the 5th of August. 5th, 6th, 7th and 9th would be the final. The mixed semi-final would be the 2nd. I would very much doubt that before she goes into the 400 individually, that she would do both races, the semi-final and if Ireland make it the final. So probably she would be just held back until the final. Most of the best relay nations in the world do that anyway. You saw a massive change in the fields for the European finals in Rome a few weeks ago when it came to the women's 4x4 and the men's 4x4. I mean, obviously the mixed as well. We did tremendously in being European champions. We've got a very good, strong selection there. Obviously, Charlene Mosley, Sophie Becker, Phil Healy. Probably, I would say she'd elect to run in the final only should Ireland get it. It would certainly elevate our chances of picking up a medal in it, certainly. But that semi-final in the mixed 4x4, that is August the 2nd. The final is on the 3rd. I reckon she would probably only run in that at most. And then she's got 5th, 6th, 7th, 9th for the 400. Then the women's 4x4 semi-final is also on the 9th. It's on the same day as the women's 400 individual final. So she could very easily decide that she would wish to skip that as well. And if Ireland make the final, then she would be in the decider of the 4x4. But it's as simple as this. People might say, well, why shouldn't she be in the semi-final? But hang on, Femke Bol, Noah Lyles, they don't run relay semi-finals.
Absolutely. It's really shaping up to be interesting on so many levels. And it's amazing to think that we're in the position to be in medal contention in so many disciplines within athletics as well. Like, we're so well placed across the board. So things are just going to happen so thick and fast. It's going to be unbelievable.
Well, I mean, I've covered Olympic Games previously. The first I was at was 2008 in Beijing. And you might have a day when you'd have only two or three Irish people competing. And most Olympics I've ever been at, very easy to get to every single Irish discipline. We have had pretty much every day where there have been three or four events simultaneously with Irish people in it. If you're at the rugby, you are not going to get to the canoeing. You're not going to get to the equestrianism. You're not going to get to the badminton. There's just been so much happening in so many different places. I mean, the rugby sevens, I suppose, the men's from that point of view from Ireland, bit of a disappointment that came apart in the quarterfinals, really, at the hands of Fiji. And Ireland were in control of that and were leading very well by 15-7. And then those two back-to-back tries that Fiji scored, a little bit of sloppiness there. There was a bit of unhappiness, obviously, about the Fijian winning score, but Ireland still had a chance to tie it up. beyond the 14 minutes and just couldn't get it over the line beyond the hooter. The women, by the way, having been beaten earlier today against Australia, the way the draw's gone, they'll be playing Australia in the quarterfinals tonight at the Stade de France. But there was a Dutch sports statistical company. They make predictions in advance. They're behind the likes of Opta and also Infostrada.
Okay.
And they made a prediction about every medal event, as they always do for every Olympic Games. And they estimated that Ireland, according to their predictions, would win 9 medals. That is if everything, everything goes according to plan. But like, I've got all my notes written down for the past couple of weeks. There are potentially, I would say, 12, including the rugby sevens, 12 medal prospects. I also had Aidan Walsh down as one as one, by the way. So that's 2 that are definitely gone, I'm afraid to say. Liam Jagu, by the way, doing very, very well in the canoe slalom, make his way to the final of the main C1. Loads of Irish flags out there at the complex. And to get into the final, of which 12 in the final, he qualified in 5th, but a world ranking going into it of 26th. I mean, he has performed way above his abilities, as we tend to see really so often when it comes to an Olympic Games. It was also very, very good to see Ryan Mullen with a very high finish in the men's cycling time trial on the road, where he came through in 12th spot, which is absolutely fantastic. Main Ben Healy, I remember, had led for a long time in the time trial at the European Championships when they were held in Munich a couple of years ago. So we are excelling in sports where we haven't really had the chance to excel before. And Rhys McLennan, I mean, you look at what he's produced in gymnastics, twice a world champion. He's a 3-time European champion, won Commonwealth Games gold, European Games gold. So the only major event in which he's not won a medal, and in fact in which he's not won a gold, is the Olympic Games, the pommel horse being his big discipline.
Well, Downing, I hope that the next week or two yields plenty of Irish medals. I know you mentioned their numbers like 9 and 12, but I think one and more that keep following after that, I think, as long as we get the ball rolling, hopefully even maybe tonight, then we'll see what happens. But really appreciate you joining us from Paris, and I know you'll be keeping us up to date across the course of the next couple of days. Will, thanks very much.
Absolutely delighted. And as I always say, one medal, it's good games.
Definitely. Thanks, Will.
Thanks. Thanks very much, John.
Another hectic hour put down. Thank you very much to all my guests and to all of you at home for listening, but we will have to leave it there for now. I've been Jordan Norris, and this is The Last Leg, WLR's brand new weekly Monday night sports programme. All the Olympic news, all the hurling news, everything you need to know coming up across the course of the week here on WLR Sport. Our very own John O'Shea is on the way next. Thank you very much for listening. Have a good week.